Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Here we go. And we're here. We're back. 7 days later. Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP 980 on your dial. Glad you could join us tonight. We are here tonight, Monday nights. Every Monday night, as a matter of fact, between 10 and 11 p.m. Bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Well, tonight I have an interesting topic, a special guest. But before we do that, let us go behind the glass to Miss Cindy Annis, who happens to be the 2016 Editor's Choice Award winner for the Valley Patriot newspaper. Miss Cindy Annis, there she is.
Okay, how'd you figure that one out?
How did I figure it out? I was there. I was at the banquet.
Were there? Where were you?
Yeah, I was actually on the same side of the room as you were, but I was sort of up towards the middle.
Oh.
Yeah. I left a little early, so I couldn't say hello to you and your father. But there was a whole lot of tables between us. But that must have been a little exciting, huh?
Yeah. Didn't you win a couple years ago?
I did. Same award.
Cool.
Yeah. Now it just has a different name on it. So why don't you tell the audience the column that you write every month, and so maybe they can take a look at it.
So every month I write a column about an artist from the 50s, 60s, or 70s, and you can read it in the Valley Patriot monthly. Just look at the bins at your grocery store or convenience store. You can find it there for free.
Very cool. Now, Cindy, I don't know if you know this, but I was in a rock band in the 1980s.
And, what band?
Well, it was called Orange Orange. We used to play in the Boston, Lowell, Lawrence area, southern New Hampshire. But you never asked me for an interview.
I didn't know you were in a band.
Okay.
I think she said she writes about someone in the 50s, 60s, or 70s, so you missed the cutoff.
Oh, I see. So I played in the 80s? So
you're out. You're out. You're on the outside
looking
in. But
you know what? Right now, I do a one-man band gig that I play 60s, 70s, and 80s music. So,
do you get in on a technicality? Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I'm trying to say, Mr. Kent.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I don't know. That's up to Cindy. Sorry.
It is.
It's her call. She's writing the article. She sets the criteria.
That's absolutely true. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface, as always. And there he was, ladies and gentlemen. You heard him as well as I did. My guest tonight.
I am your Kent.
Guest.
Do you have
tonight.
Another Kent?
I don't.
All right,
you are
so
my
I'm
Kent.
Your Kent.
Yeah,
that's
you're,
it.
You're Beneath the Surface is Kent.
I have the Kent exclusive.
By the way,
you?
I've never heard the word Kent for a first name before you.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How about Kent McCord?
Well.
Do you know who that is?
No.
He was the not the guy who drove the police car, but the policeman passenger in Adam 12.
Oh, is that right?
Adam 12.
Adam 12, wow.
Talk about 70s. Or was that 60s? That was 60s, I think.
I think it was 60s.
I bet there was some music in that show that could be in Cindy's column or on her show. Adam 12.
Yes, but
Kent McCord.
Speaking of 60s TV shows, the Kent that I knew of was Clark Kent.
Oh, well, that was the last name, though, and it was fictitious. Right.
Well, so wasn't Kent McCord, right?
No, Kent McCord.
Oh, that was his real name.
That's the actor's name.
Oh, that's the actor's name.
The actor's name. I have no idea what the character's name was, but the actor was Kent
McCord. So did your parents sort of... were they inspired by this name? Did they know Adam 12? Did they watch it?
Well, yes, they watched it. I grew up watching. I guess it was reruns when I watched it because I was growing up in the 70s. But maybe that was the first run. I don't know, but I thought it was a 60s show. But no, my father had an Uncle Kent.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So I was named after my great Uncle Kent.
There was a famous cigarette back then, too, called Kent.
Kent cigarettes,
cigarettes.
That used to be that people either remembered my name. When I was introduced to them, they would either make a reference to Superman or to the cigarettes.
Ah. Now, here's a trivia thing for you that you probably won't know.
Okay.
Kent cigarettes had a jingle. And their jingle, they took from a very popular pop song at that time in the 1960s.
Okay.
It was called Happiness Is. Do you remember that song? Happiness Is.
No.
To the farmer, it's a dun-dun-dun, to the dun-dun. I don't know the words.
I don't know that song. I never heard that. Is it on Cindy's show, though?
Cindy, do you have that in your computer up there? Happiness Is? So what they did
from
was...
From the 60s.
Yeah, to a smoker, it's a Kent.
Yeah, to a... Exactly.
Wow.
To the smoker, it's a Kent.
The taste of Kent.
Happiness Is the taste of Kent. Right. Cindy, how did you know that? You amaze me.
My name is Kent, and I never heard of this.
How did you know that,
Cindy? You got to pull that up for us, Cindy. I've never heard that before.
Do you have the pop song there? Can you pull that up for us?
You know what? I'm going to have to find it, but...
I bet you could even find
cigarette song. I listen to a lot of old radio stuff, and I just know this stuff.
All right. Wow. So if you can find either the regular pop song or the cigarette jingle, definitely let me know, and we'll play it over the air.
That's fascinating. Now, I can't think straight. We can't do this show. I can't go on until I hear this song and this jingle.
Jingleized
version of the song.
Cindy is hard at work now trying to find that. But
did you know Barry Manilow started his career writing jingles?
Yes, I did know that. Yeah.
I knew that because my mom was a Barry Manilow, or I assume she is a Barry Manilow fan still, but as a kid I remember hearing Barry Manilow records.
Yeah.
And my mother had a Barry Manilow live album in which he ran through some of the jingles that he wrote.
That's fun.
In his concert.
In between the jingles and becoming a solo artist, he was a background pianist for Bette Midler.
I think I knew that too. Mm. Yeah, you might have mentioned that. Everything I know about Barry Manilow is from that album.
Yes, Cindy. No, you don't.
Is she sick? No.
No, I guess not. She doesn't have it yet.
All right.
All right, so we want us to do our show, huh? I mean, we're here to do a show.
Right.
All right.
What to do with those Thanksgiving leftovers? Is that what we... No?
No.
Well, that's the one I prepared for. Is it? Are you changing gears on me now?
Yeah, sure. All right. Ladies and gentlethings, my fellow truth seekers, tonight we go beneath the surface on the topic of bringing up kids in a post-truth world. Yes, you heard me right. Bringing up kids in a post-truth world. Yeah, now, the reason why, one reason why this is apropos for my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, is because he happens to be the father of 7 children. Now, do you prefer children over kids, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
All right.
Yeah.
So, you have 7 children, and for the longest time, you were actually a stay-at-home dad.
I was. 12 years I did that for.
Yep. And you are as keenly aware as anybody.
Keenly.
Keenly. About how the modern world has thrown away truth. For subjectivism and relativism in order to try to get away with things.
Yeah.
And so we've been in a state of denial, a culture of denial for about 30, 40 years now, I think it's safe to say.
Unlike the Egyptians.
Yes, they have been within denial for all of their existence.
All 6 or 8,000 years.
But
maybe 10.
Denial is more than just a river.
In Egypt.
You know? In Egypt, yeah. So, well, what I want to talk to you about is... the challenges and the rewards of bringing up children today in our post-Christian, post-truth world that we live in today. It's I know if I were in your shoes, gosh, I don't know. I would be very, very nervous about the prospect of molding children in today's culture.
Right.
Now,
I'm afraid of moldy children.
Yeah. Well, make sure that they close are dry. That's a key. Right. That's a key thing
and
here.
Behind their ears.
Absolutely. Yeah. That too. So the one of the inspirations for the show was the Time magazine cover. Whereas 51 years ago, the cover was simply three words. 1966, it caused a ruckus. The cover simply said, "Is God dead?" with a question mark. The latest Time magazine cover now says, "Is truth dead?" with a question mark. And I don't think it was any coincidence that they put that 50 years apart. Now, my question to you, to begin this discussion, is there an inevitable and intrinsic link between the denial of God and the denial of truth?
Absolutely. I know in my own conversion, for those of the listeners who haven't heard me mention this on prior shows, I was not raised particularly religiously. In fact, not really religiously at all. We kind of celebrated Christmas and Easter, but it was mostly superficial. We did have a nice tradition where we went through the nativity story on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
But that was the extent of religion in my life.
Yeah.
So that was that. And I eventually became an atheist and then had a major conversion at about the age of 28 or so and became a Catholic. And
so you were a conscious atheist?
Oh, I was a conscious atheist.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you
used to argue with people who believed in God and, you know, kind of like Bill Maher style, I guess.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So if somebody asked you, you would label yourself that.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
All right. So you argued against the existence of God, and you thought you were clever doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I probably did it cleverly, if you could put it that way.
Yeah.
Because most of the people that I argued with didn't have answers for the challenges I threw at them, and it just sort of reaffirmed my atheism. You know, here.
So
always,
many of the folks that you challenged had a lot of faith, but not that much reason backing it up.
Yeah, just faith without reason, I guess you could say. Which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just easy to be shaken at that point.
I would say it's almost necessary, if you will, in our day and age, to have a background of theology or philosophy in some
logic,
to some
at
measure,
least, right?
To because if you're going to simply live on faith alone, like our parents, grandparents did, in their day and age, when the culture itself was, was Christian.
Right.
There wasn't much challenge to it, and you could do that, and you could stay afloat and with your faith. Today, as the great Dr. Peter Kreef says, that something like 90% of the people go into college with faith, and something like 20-30% come out with faith.
Right.
So it shakes them to the core because they don't understand their own faith.
Right. And a lot of what happens in college is you're taught not to believe, whereas I took logic and philosophy classes and things like that as an atheist. And ironically, these are the classes that kids generally take, if not, in other areas of the humanities, like the social sciences, history, literature. They're really steered away from religion. They're steered toward atheism. But I took these classes, and they actually helped to convert me from atheism to theism, I guess you could say, ultimately to Catholicism.
It's funny you mention that because I, throughout my 12 years of school, as well as kindergarten, it was all public schools for me.
Me too,
And then I went to a public college, actually two public colleges.
As did I.
So the first Catholic college or a Catholic institute that I ever went to was for graduate school.
Yeah.
So anyway, to make a long story short, being amongst the shallow secularism that I was immersed in, it's deepened my faith.
Were you a shallow secularist at all yourself at any point? Or?
I never would really call myself one of those, no. I mean, I was immersed
Not
in
many
it.
People would.
I was very conversant. I was very conversant.
I'm a shallow secularist. Pleased to meet
I know.
You.
I was very conversant in it, but I always loved, to some degree or another, my Catholic faith throughout it. And But being in that milieu, that culture, that subculture, it was very... it really showed me that how shallow secular humanism is, and how important that the Catholic faith is, because it's substantial.
Yeah,
it doesn't change with the wind.
You know, I it's funny because as you say this, I am, and maybe I shouldn't be, but I am less impressed with converts from atheism than I am with people such as yourself, who. Stuck with their faith their whole lives, because I know as a people who are cradle Catholics, it's easy to not really see the contrast between being a Catholic and not being a Catholic. Whereas someone like myself, I know what it's like to live as a non-Catholic. I know what it's like to live very far from the faith. So the contrast, once you discover Catholicism, is stark, and it's remarkable, and it's compelling, and it commands your attention, and you have to deal with that. Whereas if you're a cradle Catholic, you don't really experience that starkness, I guess, but you're saying you did.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Oh, no question about it. It made me not take my faith for granted.
Yeah, how do you like that?
Because the human heart is always looking for something permanent, something real, something true and substantial.
Yeah.
And everything that was happening around me and everything that everybody believed was just continuously changing on a whim according to fad, fashion,
politics, world events,
people's desires, what have you. And nobody was thinking. Nobody was thinking past the surface, believe it or not.
This
is one reason why I have a show called Beneath the Surface.
Right. Yeah, I found that myself. And I found that even in those humanities classes, philosophy classes that make people atheists, there was an irony there that I took these classes and looked around and saw the same thing that these other kids were seeing, and yet couldn't understand how they could stop at that shallow level. If you pursued, if you followed through on what you were being taught, relativism, secularism... Yeah. Don't hold up, and That's only right. theism does.
Well, we're going to talk more about that right after the break, where our general topic tonight is bringing up children, our kids, in the post-truth world that we live in. Mr. Kent Niever is my guest, father of seven. I'm Paul Morano, your host, as usual, and Cindy behind the glass is playing Peace of Mind, so we need to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
A goalie, it's a save, save, save to a server.
There it is.
It's a wave, wave, wave.
My song.
To the colonel.
Listen.
It's a regiment to a smoker.
It's a Kent.
The taste of Kent.
Happiness is.
The taste of Kent.
Happiness is.
The taste of Kent. More taste, fine tobacco.
That's what happiness is.
To a gourmet.
Woo!
It's a special sauce to a cowboy. It's his favorite hoss to a hostess.
All right, you can't beat this.
It's a compliment.
You just can't beat it.
They don't write a hostess anymore. They don't write
it's a Kent.
Wow.
The taste of Kent.
Happiness is.
The taste of
Woo!
Kent.
Happiness is.
The taste of Kent. More taste, fine tobacco.
That's what happiness is.
If you smoke a filter cigarette, try the taste of Kent.
How do you like that?
You're listening, believe it or not, to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Thank
My
you.
My theme song. I have a theme
Thank
song
you, Cindy.
Now.
Now,
Thank you, Cindy.
Are we going to be sued for that because we're not supposed to be playing cigarette commercials? How does that work?
I don't know. I guess you can smoke if you're Catholic.
Well, that wasn't. We weren't doing that as a commercial. For those who just tuned in, we were talking about Kent's name, and for some reason, it came up that it reminds us of the old cigarette, Kent's.
Do Kent cigarettes still exist?
I have no idea. I don't smoke. Cindy, any idea if Kent cigarettes still exist?
Oh, they might.
Yeah, well, okay. That,
we
that,
just
that helps.
Promoted them.
If they do.
Right.
All right. I really like that song.
I'm hooked now. That's,
yeah.
Of course.
And it I don't, I can't, I don't know the name of the original artist. Maybe the Wizards, Cindy does.
Who's the artist on that, Cindy? Who performed
yeah, do you have any
the
idea?
Jingle?
I need to look it up again.
Do you, Cindy, do you hear anything underneath?
I hear someone else.
You hear the heater.
No,
no,
there's
voices.
Actually, there are people talking underneath us.
That X means the house is clear. Okay, how do we find what they're looking for?
Yeah, I hear that.
How do we find what they're looking for is what they said.
Well, folks, if you're hearing that, okay.
That was it. Fixed.
They've just been annihilated.
Yeah, we just eliminated.
Whoever or whatever they were.
Yeah.
978-454- 4980 is our Beneath the Surface hotline if you want to get involved in our discussion. 978-454-4980. Happiness is the guest of Kent.
Well, here I am.
Yes.
Happiness incarnate.
So, Kent, before the break, we were talking about something.
We were. We were talking about my conversion and your non-conversion and how I was a relativist. I was an atheist. And the ironic thing about being a relativist or an atheist is you still need to come back to what's called absolutes or objective truths in order to establish relativism or atheism. You have to, to be an atheist, you have to say there is no God. Now, the irony there is you cannot prove the non-existence of something. We prove the existence of something by its effects, right? Like when we go hunting, we know there are deer if we see deer tracks, right?
If we're looking out the window and we see trees swaying, we can deduce that it must be the wind. There must be wind out
there.
Or
trees can dance.
We don't see, or trees can dance, yeah.
Right.
But we know that that isn't the case. But wind is a good analogy because we don't see it. I always wanted to see the wind.
You can't see the wind.
You cannot see the wind. You can feel the wind, but if you're in a building looking out the window, you don't even feel the wind.
You see its effects.
Exactly.
You feel its effects, but you don't feel or see the thing itself.
Let me give you a really quick example of what you're talking about.
Illustration.
Yes, indeed.
Illumination.
Now, you walk into the Museum of Fine Arts, you walk into this building and you're struck, you walk into a room and you're struck by this particular painting.
Mm.
And automatically, the first thing your pre-rational mind knows is, there is a painting, therefore there must be a...
painter.
Bingo. Yeah, you don't even have to think about it, you just know
it. Yes, right. It's
now,
there.
Here's the experiment. When you wake up in the morning, open your eyes. There is a creation.
Yeah.
Therefore, there must be a...
creator. Now, as an atheist, I wouldn't call it creation. I'd just call it the world.
Well, there is a world. There must be a world maker.
A world maker. But I would do what most atheists do, and I would, start thinking about the Big Bang or things like that.
Sure. Those are secondary causes. The way that things come into being.
So what... One of the things that got me was realizing, well, wait, where did the matter that banged come from?
Mm.
What created the matter? Because what we notice with matter is that it doesn't create itself. It undergoes changes, right? Mm. It might get corrupted. It might get accretions, right? That make it expand.
Matter continuously transforms.
Right. Transformation, though, is not creation.
Right.
Right?
Out of nothing.
So where did the matter come from? And these were questions that I got stuck on as an atheist.
So, of course, since Aquinas' second proof for the existence of God, he had five of them, was that there must be a first uncaused cause to all
Something
things.
Something that, as I was saying, if you look at all the matter, the nature of matter or the characteristics of matter do not include self-creation.
No.
They include transformation of various kinds, but matter does not create itself.
No, it can't.
So therefore, there must be something in existence whose nature it is to create.
And whose nature it is to be outside of time and hence always be.
In other words, to be uncreated.
Yeah.
The uncreated creator, right? It is the nature there must be something that exists, the nature of which is that it is uncreated,
yeah,
and that it creates.
And if you look at the time, space, matter realm that we exist in, the continuum of matter, time, and space, it itself is a creature.
Exactly.
All three of those dimensions.
Yep.
And so this uncaused cause must be, must transcend or must be outside of
it. Has to
time
pre-exist
and, time
things.
And space.
It has to pre-exist
right.
time. It has to pre, which is ironic to talk about pre-existing
yeah.
time because
right.
pre means before, which
right.
implies time. But
right.
it has to exist, as we sometimes say, outside of time. Right.
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about Aquinas' second proof of the existence of God, because I was thinking of talking tonight about the fourth proof for the reason that the name of the show is called Bringing Up Kids in a Post-Truth World.
Right.
How do we know that there is a truth, or why would we have this language of truth and falsehood? Where does that come from?
Yeah, you know, I heard not too long ago, past year or so, and if I think about it long enough, I may remember the gentleman's name, but a priest was giving a talk of which I had an audio recording, and he said a very handy definition for truth is simply two words.
Hmm.
What is?
Yeah.
Truth is what is. So, in other words, the fact that I exist means that there is truth.
Mm.
We can't live in a relativistic existence if we exist.
So it's a recognition of what is as it is.
Exactly. Mm. Right. Now, very often there are objections raised saying, well, yeah, you know, you may exist and we might be able to, you know, say that, you know, I don't know, the purpose of the heart is to pump blood. The purpose of the brain is to, you know, do all this neurological, keep the whole neurological network functioning. The purpose of, you know, the kidneys is to filter out toxins, on and on and on, right?
Yes.
But we somehow stop at what the purpose of our existence is. Or if we talk about the purpose of our existence, we end up having a conversation that goes something like, the purpose of my existence is to pursue pleasure or something like that. Or to say, you know, I exist in order to, you know, play sports or something like that.
I need to break down a couple of things that you've said there in that little piece, because it's very important. You went from what is to why is. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and by the way, this is very important, because as Aristotle used to say, that what something is, we can understand more clearly what something is by virtue of what it is for.
Yeah.
Or why it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the what is related directly to the why.
Yes.
And what he called these things were formal cause and final cause.
Yes.
So to understand the formal cause or the what of something, you have to understand the final cause of what it exists for, why it is.
Right.
And so you're saying now that all things have a formal and a final cause,
right.
and human beings are no different than that.
Right.
So human nature or humanity itself has a whatness to it that's different from dogs, different from flowers, different from trees. We have a certain essence or whatness or definition by virtue of being a human being. But that is very intricately tied up with why. Why do we exist? What is our purpose, our end, the telos?
Yep. A couple of years ago, I was, as a believing Catholic, having this conversation with an atheist where we were talking about purposes of various things in creation.
Yes.
And he actually got down to his argument ultimately became, yes, everything has a purpose. Everything has a defined nature except human beings.
Well, I mean, this is popular among existentialists today. That's
right.
We get to define and recreate ourselves at will.
Sure.
And whatever we call ourselves, that's what we are.
Exactly.
Now, and obviously, so, you see this going on today in movements like transgenderism, right?
Right, exactly.
And other similar movements.
So the irony is how can we look at other things in this world and say, yes, the purpose of this is to do that, and the purpose of this is to do that, on and on and on at every level of all the sciences, and somehow we look at humanity as an exception to a rule that applies absolutely everywhere in the rest of the universe. How can we maintain such a contradiction, such an inconsistency? And, you know, look ourselves in the mirror, right?
Yeah, I don't know. By virtue of the fact that we're different than everything else in creation by having an intellect and a will.
Sure.
That we can freely choose our own destiny, but
actually, I would not say that we freely choose our own destiny. We may freely choose our fate, but not our destiny, right? We are destined for. When I think of the terms destiny and fate, I think destiny means what we're created for. Our telos, our aim, our goal, our end, our purpose, right?
Okay.
Whereas when I think of fate, it's where we end up, right? So I might end up being something very different from what I was created for.
Okay. So in that way of looking at the word destiny, destiny means telos, and that means ultimate and eternal happiness.
Right.
Because we were made for happiness.
Final cause, right?
No one cannot not seek happiness.
Sure. Now, when you get down to raising children in this context, this is actually a great time to have this show because – very recently, this past weekend, and I guess two or three weekends ago, I've had two separate conversations with two of my children, on a different occasion, and in one case, a boyfriend and his family, parents, and the other case, a girlfriend and her parents. And one of the points I was making to them, because these are two teenagers...
Wait, let me understand this. Are you saying that one of your girls has a boyfriend and one of your boys has a girlfriend?
Is that
what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you said that right. One of my girls has a boyfriend and one of my boys has a girlfriend.
Okay, yes. Wait. Mm-hmm. Just for the audience's sake.
Yep.
Ages?
16 and just about 15.
Okay, and you had the honor, the pleasure of meeting their parents, these girlfriend.
Yes. Yep. Actually,
this is very cool.
One of the families we already knew, and then another family we've gotten to know a little bit. But anyway,
continue
the point in terms of raising kids in a world that rejects truth is one of the things I was trying to communicate to not only my kids but their boyfriend and girlfriend is that we are all made for something.
Yeah.
And you absolutely must keep that in mind in all your relationships. You have to live according to your nature.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And yet there is so much pressure.
Militating against that. Yeah.
That we don't have a nature. Yeah. Everything else in nature has a nature except humans.
Yes.
This is the argument today.
Yes.
Right? And so...
And by the way, this means that since we don't have a nature, we can create our own moral codes.
There are no moral codes.
Well,
You just do what you want.
My moral code.
Right. The moral code is do whatever you want, and it's neither right or wrong.
Right.
Right? So what I'm trying to teach my kids and their boyfriend, girlfriend, etc., is that remember who you are. Remember what you are and make sure you live according to that. Make sure you live according to your nature.
When you talk to a 15 or 16 year old kid about that, I mean, maybe you or I were maybe an exception to a rule. We could probably at 15 and 16, our ears will probably go up and say, wow, this is cool stuff.
Yeah.
Were they saying that or are they saying this guy's your father's a nerd? What were they thinking?
No, I don't think they thought I was a nerd. They might have thought I was frightening.
Okay.
But I don't think they thought I was a nerd. But what I tried to do is put it in a different context. I tried to put it in terms that they would understand. I'm translating for Beneath the Surface.
Okay. I want to hear more about these stories here with your son's girlfriend and your daughter's boyfriend and how that all worked out. What they think about themselves as human beings today. It's kind of interesting. what are they called, millennials, or is that too
I think it's I think something they're else too now? Young to be millennials.
Yeah, what are they called now?
Let's call them post millennials.
All right, so post,
because I'm not clever enough to think of a better name.
I would really, and you're much more, you have more privy to this than I do, but I would love to know what's inside the post millennial mind. Yeah. Maybe you can enlighten me after the break.
As a parent, so would I.
our BTS hotline is 978-454-4980, 978-454-4980. We're talking over bringing up kids in a post-truth world. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. That's Kent Niebuhr. Be back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Happiness is...
All right.
Happiness is...
There it is.
Happiness is...
Good old Cindy.
Different things to different people. That's what happiness is.
Relativism. It's everywhere. It's been there since the 50s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. Happiness is... What is it? Well, actually, it's something that everybody is seeking.
Sure.
The problem is that we don't always seek it in the right ways, and we don't end up there. But
we're looking for love in all the wrong places,
look,
Paul.
That's that was a good song, I guess, back in the 1970s, was it, or 80s?
It might have been the 80s. Okay. That might have made it into the 80s. I think so.
All right. So my guest is Kent Niebuhr, and we're talking about raising children in a post-truth world. And before the break, Kent, you were talking about sitting down and talking to two of your kids, not at the same time, but
right.
two of your kids and their significant others, as much as you can call them that, at 15 or 16 years old.
Yep.
Boy, we could do a whole show on what that means today.
Sure.
But when you were saying this, that you need to understand who and what you are and live according to that, I assume you were talking about chastity.
Yeah.
Mainly.
Yes, mainly chastity, but other things kind of wove their way in and out of that. But the way that I described it in that context was more like, look, every girl really wants sort of the Cinderella story.
They're looking for love.
Yeah, exactly. And not only just are they looking for love, we're not just talking about romance. We're talking about true love. We're talking about Prince Charming, who lays down his life for his beloved, who's willing to die to save the princess from the dragon.
So, in other words, you were talking to them about the masculine and feminine dimensions of the interplay of love.
Exactly, and
okay.
how they are objective, and that they're not expendable. And
but what does this have to do with a 15 or 16 year old dating somebody else?
Because today,
I put that in quotes.
Yep,
I don't even know what
right,
that means.
Right. Today, what kids are taught is that life is an experiment. Everything you do is an experiment. And try this for a while.
So
and try
experience
that for
this.
A while.
Just like the devil was saying to Eve.
Exactly.
And the devil
was saying to Jesus.
Experience this fruit. Right.
Right. Right.
And she fell for it.
Yeah, look at it. It looks good, doesn't it?
All right. So basically you were trying to say that we were made for a conjugal love.
Yep.
That must be special, unique, and exclusive between spouses, and you guys aren't spouses. Was that part of the message?
Well, it's funny. The way my wife basically put it was like, look, if you're going to enter into this type of relationship at this age, realize that what you're doing is a very adult thing. And so now you've just activated, so to speak, all these very adult responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how an adult is supposed to behave. If you're going to engage in this adult type of relationship, then this is how an adult has to behave.
Was there ever a message in your message to them about always keeping in mind the other's potential future spouse?
Absolutely.
Believing that it's probably not them?
That was a more subtle point in the conversation, at least the conversation that we had this weekend. It was more so the conversation that I had a couple of weekends ago, but it was very much emphasized that you have to realize that even at this young age, what you're doing now will have consequences that will stay with you for the rest of your life.
Right, Right. And you don't want those consequences if they militate against your the good of your future and your happiness.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, the with it, it's young girls mm-hmm. or even grown women
yeah.
understand they can relate to the whole concept of the Cinderella story, the Snow White mm-hmm. story, and how that's an ideal.
Yes.
Right? That's yeah. really what they would like. And, mm. you know, it's called fantasies or fairy right. tales, but the reality is those things have substance, if you will. They have gravitas.
They have substance, but, and I say but, they can easily be manipulated.
Yes.
In as much as what people can do with pornography vis-a-vis males,
sure.
people can also do with romance stories vis-a-vis females.
Exactly. It is so
easy. Create an unreality yeah. for them you, to yep. expect, which yep. will never happen.
You can turn the Cinderella story into a Harlequin romance,
yeah.
which is devoid of substance or reality at a mm. certain level. It's got all the romance, but yeah. it doesn't have the real yeah. substance. You could turn, like, you know, I was emphasizing to my son, I was saying, look, your responsibility to this girl is to protect her, right? Mm. Is to do no harm to her, first of all.
Right.
Not to be a threat yourself, but also...
But if there is no truth, Kent, how do yeah. you know if what is harmful?
Yeah, and what I'm saying
People
is,
have redefined harm yeah,
at
today.
At this age, what I'm saying is, for her paradigm is, let's say, the Cinderella story, the Snow White story, the Beauty and the Beast story, right? And for him, his paradigm is, you could say, those princes in those stories, Prince Charming, or I don't even remember okay. all the names of the other princes, but to either be that, or he could even think of terms in terms of being like, I don't know if you're up on this because you don't have kids, but the Marvel superheroes
yeah.
are everywhere now.
Yeah.
All these Marvel superheroes. And what that keys into is, particularly with boys, young men, even men, is that they recognize in that there is something heroic
yeah.
about being a man, and that you have to risk your life to fight evil.
Yes.
And this cannot be true without objective truth.
Because there wouldn't it be any right from wrong or
right.
good from evil.
Yeah, let the damsel in distress get crushed by the monster. What do I care? What difference does it make
and
for me?
And radical feminism is telling you that she can protect herself so she doesn't need you.
Right, exactly. So there's an isolationism about it, right? There's, mm-hmm. You know, and the irony is when I look at men and women, right?
Okay.
I always, one of the analogies I always use is, let's say, you know, a spaceship with aliens on it came and it grabbed a bunch of people from this planet and took them up to their laboratory on the other planet or even just up in their spaceship.
Yep.
And they started studying this creature from Earth, and they're trying to get an idea of the species by whatever the 10 or so samples that they got.
Mm.
Well, let's just imagine that for whatever reason, they only got 10 males.
Okay.
They could not make sense out of humanity.
That's no, they couldn't.
With just 10 males.
Like,
let's say they just got 10 females.
Yeah.
They could not make sense out of humanity with just 10 females.
That's right.
Or 10 males. The only way humans make sense is when you have the male and the female, and woman.
The two halves of humanity
coming
together.
Have to be taken as a whole in order for humanity to make sense.
To make any sense.
And there's a certain branch of feminism, which sadly seems to be the one that prevailed, that, you know, the whole Gloria Steinem comment, women need men like a fish need a bicycle, right? Fish need a bicycle, right? That is so contrary to nature.
Yeah.
That is so contrary to reality.
So then bringing up kids in a post-truth world is challenging.
Yeah, and you have to somehow appeal to their, what do you want to say? I don't want to use the word instincts, but they all have this sense, like
girls,
young girls all have this sense that there's really something appealing about all these Disney princesses,
I think you need to get them young because both academia and the media brainwash them into this nonsense at such an early age
yes.
that even though what you're saying is true, intuitively they understand their own human nature.
Yep.
It gets more and
corrupted,
more and more
confused,
buried.
Right. But here's
buried
the thing.
Underneath all the layers of brainwashing.
You said you have to get them young, but it's more than that. You do have to get them young, but it never ends.
Yeah.
You have to constantly be addressing it again and again and again and again. It never ends because, you know, addressing that with my, you know, I have my youngest daughter is six, and I have a 7-year-old daughter. I have a 10-year-old daughter, an 11-year-old daughter, and I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I have a 13 and 14-year-old son. 14-year-old's almost 15. But the point is how you address it at one age is not going to be sufficient when they hit another age.
Right.
And so you have to constantly be addressing this and constantly finding new ways
to
address
it. What do you appeal to? Their reasoning or their faith in God? Because it has to be one or the other. Or both.
To be honest with you, the younger they are, you appeal to their emotions.
Their emotions.
Their sense of what they would like. Like, how would I want to be treated? Right.
Okay.
And so you appeal to that, or at least what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm doing it right.
But you need
time will tell.
But you need to have some kind of moral maturity to say, well, because I like it this way, I'm going to treat somebody else that way.
No, it's more like this. It's like, would you like it if someone took your toy away?
I know. I know. But at usually, very often at a young age, you would say, I wouldn't want someone to take my toy away, but I want to take theirs away. And there's no contradiction in one's mind because their intellect isn't mature enough.
So that's the point at which that's the message. That's what you tell them, that you don't take his toy away because you wouldn't want him to take your toy away, right? Or you might even go to this length, which seems cruel at some level, but if one child takes the other child's toy, you tell the other child, now you take his toy.
By the way, you are speaking about something that is so fundamental in human beings. The very first moral response of any human being is that's not fair.
Exactly.
There's a sense of justice that we're born with.
Right.
That you don't even have to teach it.
Kids
just know this.
But I will say this.
Yes.
At the youngest of ages, and unless you address it at the youngest of ages, what they mean when they say that's not fair is, but I want it.
Yeah.
It's not fair that I don't get such and such because I want it. In other words,
sometimes when somebody's cheating, though, they can see that.
They understand when they're being betrayed, when they're being cheated.
It's more difficult to understand when they're doing it to somebody else.
Exactly.
Well, same with adults, I guess.
So that's the first step. That's where you first want to get them to be sympathetic or empathetic, right? Is you want to get them to a point where they think of things in those terms.
All right.
And build on it.
Our BTS hotline, if you want to get involved in our conversation about bringing up kids in a post-truth world, 978-454-4980 or 4980, whichever one you choose.
We'll both
I think
work?
They'll both work,
okay.
Yeah. All right. So then, you've got your hands full. Would you say that trying to keep your kids faithful to the truth of their own being is a 24/7 job?
Yeah, it absolutely is. There's no doubt that.
Now, you've got the media that's militating completely against this.
Right.
You've got the whole academic world that has militating totally against this.
Yep.
What you have for this, I suppose, are some people within the church and family members and good friends, right?
Well, I think the first and the most important thing, even secular studies back this up, is your kids need to know that you love them. Your kids need to feel secure with you. Even if you're telling them what they don't want to hear, you want to create a scenario in which they can't get around the fact that you love them. And if they're convinced of that, then everything else that happens is understood through that lens.
So even if all of their secular friends are doing X, and you say there's no way you can do X, they'll accept it peacefully?
No. And the other thing is this. They might end up doing X, but they know what the standard is, and they know where you stand on it. And they know that you tell them that because you love them.
But do they trust that the one who loves them knows what he's talking about?
No.
Okay, that's a problem.
Yes, it is a problem. That's the challenge of parenting in a nutshell.
But don't you need to somehow convince them that the authority that you have comes directly from God? You're borrowing an authority from the eternal authority?
Yeah, and you can throw that in there, but it really depends on their faith that you can't really have much insight into. That is such an interior thing.
Mystery.
You can only assume that this kid is absorbing what you've been teaching all these years, but you don't really know. Mm. So you can't really tell if that means anything to them, it matters.
If a child says to themselves, if my parents are telling me something different than God, isn't there a dissonance here?
Right. So, yeah, you definitely put that out there. You definitely say that, look, I'm doing this because I have to face God. And if I don't do what's right with God, then not only are you in trouble, but I'm in trouble too.
Right.
So I kind of lay it out in those terms.
All right.
But you have to address it in many other ways too.
So faith, reason, emotion, convince them that
they are loved, social consequences.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's challenging, but it's rewarding.
Well, we hope it's rewarding. I'm not going to know for a very long time whether or not I'll be rewarded for my efforts. But that's at this point, you do what you have. You do what's right, and things are going to turn out either right or wrong. But regardless of how they turn out,
regardless of consequences, you need to remain faithful.
Exactly.
As Mother Teresa said, Christ doesn't call me to be successful. He calls me to be faithful.
That's what it comes down to. That's right.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. Thank you very much, Kent.
And now I have a jingle that I didn't know about.
You bet.
Thank you, Sandy, for my jingle.
You've been listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Stay tuned for Cindy's Vinyl Vault.
Woohoo!
Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.